Well, boys, looks like you started the fun without me.
You're all sick. Every last one of you.
We're going to need a bigger gun.
What's the matter? You scared of things that go boom, boom, boom?
Give me one goddamn reason why I shouldn't blow your goddamn brains all over that goddamn wall.
I feel like we're gonna break some news or something today.
Yeah.
I feel like, I don't know, these movies just make me think, I feel like Edward Snowden right now.
Mm-hmm.
I'm gonna drop a wiki leak.
Yeah.
Whatever the fuck that means.
You're gonna leak a wiki.
None of those things are connected.
Right.
Actually, that was irresponsible of me to do,
mm-hmm.
to connect WikiLeaks and Edward Snowden. I'm just feeding into misconception. Aren't we doing that this year? Snowden?
I believe, yeah. What's that called? Citizen 4? That's on here.
All right. Well, we'll fix that then.
Spoiler alert, by the way. There are people who don't want to know the schedule.
Oh, yeah. Sorry about that.
But get used to it because we spoil shows here on Double Feature. And that'd be the 24-minute mark. Sorry, I know you had something more important to say, but I'm just...
I really didn't.
Trying to get to the rigmarole.
I think...
The rickety-rackety.
I think...
The old razzle-dazzle.
Listen, I'm back in pure form today, right?
Yeah.
This isn't like when I had that terrible cold last week. I mean, I clearly have gotten much better.
Things have improved.
The show is also better if you have seen the movies that we're going to be talking about. Otherwise, it's just guys talking about things you don't even know what they're saying.
We went and saw them. Why can't you?
I mean, we're not going to cover the plots of the movies.
Not really.
And if you saw them 15 years ago, you probably won't remember what we're talking about.
Yep.
Or maybe you'll remember. I wouldn't remember.
Sure.
Year one, mm-hmm. Freddy versus Jason and Steal This Film 2.
Wow. That's a weird pair.
Yeah. I have a lot to say about both of those and I just won't, I guess, because cool. What time, but.
This is a far better articulated pair than that one. Let's just put this that way.
I love Freddy versus Jason still,
uh-huh.
despite the fact that on the internet's recent Halloween Friday the 13th type lists, everybody seemed to rate that pretty low, so fuck them.
Mm-hmm.
And don't steal movies. That's how I've evolved from that.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have these corrupt kind of powers,
mm-hmm.
corrupt cover-ups by, you know, the powers that be, whoever those may be.
Right.
And the back doors and shady rooms that they live in.
Sure.
What are the movies?
We're going to do Wag the Dog and we're going to do The Insider.
So I believe we have differing... there's spoilers in this show. I might spoil something now. I don't know. So 24-minute mark. See you later. I believe we have differing approaches to the exposure we get to the back room. In these two movies.
Dare we say different tones as well?
Yeah, well, that's... yes. I don't think that's a dare, I think.
Different goofy glasses on the film?
Right, right. There is definitely a poster for Wag the Dog, and I think they're just holding coffee or something, but it looks like Robert De Niro fist-bumping Dustin Hoffman. I don't know if you've seen this.
I haven't seen it.
This poster. Yeah, it's pretty much amazing. Just going to go ahead and drop that in this messages window. If you just squint, that's clearly what they're doing.
Yeah, that's what's happening.
So thanks for that. Thanks for looking at that.
For sure.
The Insider is surprisingly going to take a look from the outside.
Mm-hmm.
And Wag the Dog is going to be right in the heart of the sort of...
right.
I'm just spoiling things. I can't just...
Sure.
We'll figure it out. The Insider. So let's fix this right now that I've said the words. The Insider is called The Insider because this guy is coming out of Big Tobacco and talking about it.
Right.
So you would think, okay, well, we're going to see the inside. But I think we deal so much with his struggle of, now I'm on the outside, how do I still tell this story? That's why I think this is the outside movie.
Uh-huh.
I don't know if you're kind of there with me or
I definitely see what you're saying. And also one of the things...
he's an outlaw at that point.
Well, one of the other things that I feel compared to the other movie we're doing today is that this movie deals far more with the roadblocks of clandestine media
mm.
You know what I mean? It's way heavier on the, no, we're keeping the truth down because it's bad for ratings or bad for business or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's way more underdogs fighting to get the truth out. Whereas maybe that's not so much the case with the other film in the pair.
I think the other thing that's cool about these two movies back to back is I don't think they would disagree about generally the way the world works.
No, definitely not.
You know, they would both think that a large government could easily cover up a thing, or a large entity could cover up a thing.
Sure.
And people will try and figure it out, but it's so much easier for the large entity to prevail.
Right.
And one does that kind of as the large entity going, haha, it's easy.
Right.
And we start off with the Michael Mann movie, which is the more intense, you know.
Sure.
The look at how much this is going to fuck up this man's life. And then later we'll get to laugh at it,
mm-hmm.
which is always, you know, a good order for that.
Right.
We also considered, I think, doing this with Network, which feels like another kind of in that similar vein. Right. If you want to go back and check out the show. I think this is a really tense movie.
Like, yeah. Oh, definitely.
All Michael Mann movies.
Definitely. Yeah.
But we start on this kidnapping and we're going through it. And then we get the little reveal that it's a journalist.
Mm-hmm.
And it just becomes more riveting. It's one of my favorite moments from any of the Michael Mann movies. Probably because I watched The Insider with, you know, 5 or 6 years between each viewing. And I forget what the fuck is going on. So when I see that, oh, this is these are our characters. We're just learning what ends they will go to
mm-hmm.
to really get the job done. And I also never remember the opening of the Wallace interview where they're squaring off.
Yeah.
One, how intense that is and how it appears to be about, you know, respecting his credentials and the sort of bona fides, or however that's pronounced, of basically this guy knows his stuff. That's mm-hmm. what I should be saying. Right. Don't fuck with this guy. He's serious. He's for real. But then he kind of laughs it off as, oh yeah, I got my adrenaline rush. That's why I was fucking with these guys. My heart's pumping now. We can do this. And that's just, you know, it's an intro for another story.
Right.
And then this becomes a story about, it's a tense movie about exposing science, exposing suppressed science.
And it becomes this story about the risks of telling the truth, which... it's definitely not something, it's not untouched in film,
mm-hmm.
especially when journalism is called into account, or tobacco ever.
Yeah.
But it's definitely one of the most gripping versions of the story. And furthermore, because it's based on true events, which is to say that it's a movie.
Yeah. Yeah.
That the people are people and they breathe air.
And it took place in Minnesota. I think that's the other.
Right. And that's the other part. Or North Dakota.
It's a movie about that. And it's also a movie about, as they say, ordinary people under extraordinary pressure. And I think we were talking before we went on about which one of these was the David Mamet movie. And the reason that I kind of get surprised that The Insider doesn't lean more towards the Mamet stuff is this hanging on to one's ideals that is at the core of this.
Mm-hmm.
The conflicts really become about that. And I think that's more a Sorkin thing than a Mamet thing, but that's always, you know, because of my journey backwards into Mamet,
right?
Connection that I make. But really, as things start to get heavy, we get those Network moments. We get those, well, the newsroom moments, the right. corporation is falling down, and whose side are you on? The news corporation, right?
Mm-hmm.
We have these two factions. We have shady tobacco, and we have shady corporate news. And both of these juggernauts are on either side of this character, and he has to kind of figure out, while traveling the downward spiral, losing his family and kind of going insane, who he can have an alliance with, but he knows he has no friend at tobacco.
Right.
It's basically, should I avoid tobacco fucking me or avoid tobacco and the news corporation fucking me?
Right. Well, and two, on top of that, he's constantly risking losing much more than his job when his wife threatens to walk because he can't be telling the truth. And then that's juxtaposed against whether or not he wants his children to know why he did what he did and why it was a problem. I mean, it's there's all these forces for that character that it's a level of stress in the cinematic formula that is, it's tough to watch, let alone be under, because he's truly in a situation where he's in a room alone with no friends. There aren't any friends. He has, he's basically going, which is the least terrible way to go.
Yeah. And all the people in his life who are the closest to him, especially towards the end, are people he's just met and doesn't even know if he can trust.
Right. Well, and they're all of dubious motivations as far as he knows.
Right. And that, you know, that might continue to be true. I mean, even when we look at Al Pacino's character, his motivation, this gets back to that whole friend or pet thing from Spiral, the altruism sort of not really existing because you do things to get dopamine and feel good, I guess. But Al Pacino wants to be able to say, I never put a witness out there that I couldn't protect.
Right.
And that appears to be an altruistic thing, but also he doesn't want, you know, a mark on his career.
Right.
And that's important for him. And I do think that is more of a self-driven motive than people might look at this movie and consider it.
Mm-hmm.
That doesn't mean it's not his greatest ally.
Right.
I mean, start looking at tobacco. So the thing that makes tobacco really scary, and that's my favorite part about The Insider, is, you know, growing up through the Say No to Tobacco campaigns.
Sure.
That even go on today and the commercials and all of that. Tobacco just falling apart over the decades. They look, a lot of that stuff looks silly in retrospect. You know, the body bag megaphone commercials and stuff.
Right.
That was the way to reach out to younger people, to the MTV generation, let them know not to smoke. But tobacco is, I think of it more like in Thank You for Smoking.
That's what I mean. It's hard not to.
Those sort of backroom, you know, talks where it's a little funny how much they can control. And here, I really do think it's scary.
Yeah.
I think it's a scary organization. And it's one of the only times that I've seen that, because it is a scary organization.
Right.
I mean, it has killed people, even if only through their product.
Right.
And it's very likely killed people while they knew that it was doing that.
Sure.
And that's a scary thing. And somehow it's not often portrayed as a shadowy organization. It's
definitely, the stakes are high for anybody who's up against a company that probably knowingly makes money off essentially selling slow death.
Yeah.
And you can argue that if you want. That's fine. I don't care. But there's definitely the portrayal in the film, at least, is that this is an organization that profits off slowly killing, first addicting and then slowly killing its customers, right? That's right. at the very least what the film is saying is true.
And part of the reason to hook them young.
Right, exactly.
Because you know your customers will die off.
Right.
And unlike the big pharma accusations, where that is, I mean, really the biggest reason that's not true, that medicine isn't killing people, because where would the customers go?
Yeah.
But you can see it in tobacco. They go, well, it just so happens the thing we have kills people. We didn't set out to do that, but it does. So the best thing for us to do is get them really young, and we'll maximize the number of years we get out of them and continue, you know, replenishing the population.
So all of that stacked against this one guy who goes, I think I'm going to try to out you.
Yeah.
Becomes incredibly crushing for that one guy, because again, you're looking at a corporation that's essentially making a buck off killing people. And why would they hesitate to do anything less at that point when you're talking about taking the buck away?
This life might be just as inconsequential to them.
Exactly.
As the other lives, you know, that have been lost. And I think that's one of the things that makes them scary is to go, well, if we really are saying that, you know, what he's going to expose is they're knowingly killing people, then he's also got to be, more than anyone else, he has to believe these guys may come after me and kill me. It's inconsequential for them to do that.
Right.
So that makes it terrifying. You see the terror in the character there. And then the fact that they're just everywhere. It's sort of that we are the police moment.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a piece of Fight Club or something, Ideas Fight Club played on.
Right.
When so many people have infiltrated an organization. Or what was that Kurt Russell movie we did on additional content? It's kind of a road movie.
Breakdown?
Breakdown, yeah. We were talking about is that maybe, you know, we had those ideas swimming in the beginning of the movie, like, oh, it's a weird town and what's going on here. And so once you see that the police might not be able to help, and even the news organization, it's not as if they've infiltrated it. Well, I guess in a way it is, right?
Yeah, right.
It's the high ups at one place are now going to become the high ups at the other place, and it will trickle down and it's affecting everyone. So then you have this other organization. You have the corporate news.
Right. Who at least has a face in this movie.
They do.
Corporate tobacco is a force. It is an unseen force a la Evil Dead.
Yeah.
Whereas the news corporation, you at least get suits.
Well, the enemies don't really have faces there. They kind of do. You get representatives that go, my hands are tied,
right,
and they become the evildoer. But I think it is a tall order, let's say, to tackle all of this tobacco stuff and then to really take a realistic look at the financial interests of corporate news. Not just to go, one's the bad guy and one's the good guy, but to then get to the point where we have beat tobacco and let's just put the story out. Well, not so fast. There's another villain. It's corporate news.
Right.
And while we're exposing tobacco as a movie in the narrative, which isn't really, it's not like this movie's really exposing tobacco. It's telling the story of that.
Right.
They're also stepping up about another thing that is very dubious, which is just, just strange bedfellows. The idea of there is news and news has a bottom line to be accountable for. And so a lot of times the monetary interests of the news drive their content.
Mm-hmm.
John Stewart would probably blame that for all news being terrible. I think that was a large part of his claim throughout his run at The Daily Show, is that as long as money's tied into it, people have to chase the dollar. And so news gets stupider. It, on a long enough timeline, all roads lead to BuzzFeed.
I think
that's kind of where that goes. A terrible accident has just happened here. Let's see what people are saying on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And that's just kind of become what it is. Is there an alternative to, I mean, isn't that just how news has to work though?
Well, I mean,
news has to operate somehow and they need to get a budget for that. You know?
Sure. Yeah. And that's true. It's just, it's interesting too, because one of the things that's slowly becoming public knowledge in the US is that organizations like the BBC and Al Jazeera are actually reporting news.
Yeah.
Whereas
the internet has shown this.
Our CNN and our MSNBCs are, you know, talking about Kardashians or Bernie Sanders's.
Yeah, I mean,
a year before the election. And meanwhile, you know, there are bombings in Beirut. And the idea there, I think there has to be an answer, right? There, it's not just how do they make the money to support paying for the news. And I don't know. I mean, I'm not sure what the financial infrastructure looks like for something like the BBC.
Yeah.
It's got to be huge.
Yeah, but it does seem completely at odds to have it be, you know, driven by Doritos funds your news spot. And on that news spot, you find out Doritos are poisonous.
Right.
How can you report on it?
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, that's a really oversimplified. The waters get very murky. And I also think the difference in the news, to mention the BBC, is that people here, and I wanted to say this universally, but maybe it is very cultural. We've talked about this before. People want their opinions confirmed rather than challenged.
Right.
So people tune into Fox to hate the opinion they know Fox already has, or to hear Fox confirm the opinion they know Fox already has, which is the one they have. And this is true of all of these news organizations. The idea that good news is not profitable news. And how does an organization exist if it can't profit? So I don't know. I don't know the answer to any of that.
And I don't think that that's... I'm not even sure that that's something that they even attempt to answer in The Insider. I think by the time those...
No, they're just very aware it's there.
Right. By the time those questions are raised, the film definitely falls to a more personal perspective.
Mm.
It's going off character motivations and resolutions for these individuals. One of the things that I definitely respect about the movie is the fact that it has the wherewithal to, and I think it almost has to, just based on the subject matter, but it ends with the, some of this was fictionalized for dramatic effect.
Yeah, right.
Something that they absolutely don't have to do, and that is basically just something you or I assume whenever anything is supposedly true.
Yeah.
I mean, we made jokes about it before, but the idea of truth is essentially the big question mark in The Insider.
Mm-hmm.
Is, does truth end with a question mark or a dollar sign? And
yeah, yeah, right.
How do you make it start with one and end with the other, maybe?
Well, I think the reason that I always assume that is because you'll never know 100% truth about anything.
Sure.
Look at the very character. You know, there's that absurd, the phone call that just turns absurd.
Right.
Where Pacino's going, you know, what about this stuff? And you had an ex-wife and a child, and it just devolves into, and you didn't make a payment on a late night TV can opener. You know, really getting into the
right,
these tiny things, it sort of asks the question, what is truth? How deep do you have to go before you really feel, okay, we've gotten everything?
Right.
Because if we had a complete write-up, the official history of the events of The Insider, and we made the movie to the letter of everything that was in there, things are still omitted. Even books are edited.
Mm-hmm.
There's always a constraint of how long a thing can be and how much, what's relevant. And a decision has to be made by a human as to what is relevant to put in this book.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, a complete biography of a total telling of the Nixon tapes might omit a piece of data that we later find out was the key piece of data to discovering another side of this we didn't understand.
Right, totally.
And that's also not something The Insider ignores. It attacks that directly, except for the ending where it, I mean, maybe it just reminds the audience, hey, be skeptical, I guess. I also feel really good that the tape airs. I know it's a little feel-goody,
mm-hmm.
but I think it does feel like all of the awful was worth it.
Totally.
Because, man, when he's sitting in that hotel room, and I believe the idea is, hey, did he shoot himself? I mean, is that the...
Right.
Yeah, okay. That's not just me being weird. It feels so heavy and beaten. And then to get that tape to air does feel like, whether it even means anything more or not at that point, or if it's the story's already out there and who cares, it does feel better.
All right, so... a little bit lighter, but also maybe a little bit darker. Wag the Dog is this movie that you told me about, and I had no idea what it was about. I assumed it had something to do with a dog. Maybe a missing dog that had to be recovered or some such nonsense.
So you thought it was going to be really light.
I did. I didn't really understand.
The Insider, what does that have to do with Beethoven's Fifth Adventure?
Exactly. But this is a movie that definitely takes a much more lighthearted approach to a very similar subject. The idea is essentially your Bernie Sanders is...
you really, lined really up. Enjoy Bernie Sanders jokes, don't you?
He's lined up to win the presidency, but it turns out you raped a baby, and you have 11 days to cover up the baby rape. Otherwise, there will be no hashtag feel the burn in 2016.
Wow, wouldn't that be a terrible world?
Terrible world. What would we do? It'd be total anarchy. People would be killing each other for their fucking phonographs. But this movie, the cast is probably one of the things that I think is one of the more interesting bits to this, because it's the story plays out how it's going to play out. You kind of get the idea. But the De Niro Hoffman dynamic here and the roles that the two play. So we talked about how Dustin Hoffman is apparently just all over this fucking year of double feature.
Yeah.
I think he's going to show up at least one more time.
The joke is supposed to be the listener pick for this week is Dustin Hoffman, who wanted us to watch Wag the Dog.
Right.
But actually the listener was Tom Leonard.
Mm-hmm.
Who recommended this for, obviously, if you don't know, the listeners from the Kickstarter, they recommend movies. They put movies on the show to be realistic. Mm-hmm. They create the schedule.
Right. And so you have this Dustin Hoffman playing the Charles Nelson Reilly character.
Mm.
So the thing that's most interesting to me about this character is where he comes from, especially through the lens of the insider.
Mm.
The insiders, all these gritty, hardworking people with desk jobs, and they're, you know, I've got this position and this is my role here and this is where my power lies. Dustin Hoffman is a film producer.
Yeah.
In the infinite DF question of what does a producer do? Apparently this fits into that answer.
I believe it's what the fuck does a producer do? That's very important.
Sorry. Thank you. And so, I mean, it's funny because this is all smoke and mirrors, but in the truer sense of the word. It's not supposed to be shadowy and sneaky. The idea is the spectacle is attractive and hey, look over here.
Robert De Niro brings the smoke and Dustin Hoffman brings the mirrors and they orchestrate a little thing.
Very accurate. And Woody Harrelson brings the grunts.
The scene where Woody Harrelson is
murdered,
running off to
murdered. The scene where he's murdered.
No, the scene where he's running off to rape the girl.
Right.
And it's comedic farce.
Right before he's murdered. Yeah.
You're really upset he's murdered.
I just think it's funny because so to put the tone of this film in perspective, they go, okay, we need a guy to pretend he is this POW coming home.
Mm-hmm.
And they go, I don't know. How about this mentally handicapped prisoner? And everybody apparently watching the movie goes, ha ha ha, perfect. And I go, that is horrible.
Yeah, right.
And then he runs off to rape a girl and gets murdered in the process. And Dustin Hoffman goes, oh, rats.
Yeah.
That's the tone of the film.
Yeah.
Which to kind of talk about The Insider, we mentioned it on The Insider, but it has a thank you for smoking vibe where it's talking about very heavy subject matter through a tone of obscene lightness.
Yeah.
The satire is so obscenely light that it feels heinous every time a scene finishes. Down to the very last moments when Charles Nelson Reilly is murdered for telling the truth.
Yeah, what a weird ending to, I mean, the ultimate joke when it's all said and done. You know, they've tried to cover up this whole thing, and then their success gets attributed to these awful fucking commercials.
Oh my God.
Which I want to ask you about. And then Dustin Hoffman walks off into the sunset just to be murdered. And it's kind of like, whoopsie.
Right.
It's just such a weird, it keeps going, this is a dark comedy, guys.
Yeah. Well, I made a joke when we were initially talking about this, where it feels like the movie kind of wrapped up and the producers walked in and went, what do you mean De Niro doesn't whack anybody?
Right. Yeah. And they do it the best way. They do it the way a producer would, which is off camera with basically nothing.
Yeah.
So
one line of dialogue, you just go, and then we whacked him.
I want to know about the faultiness of my memory here. So I'm going to ask your opinion on something we could just look up. Never change horses midstream.
Uh-huh.
in my head, Bush actually used that in his commercials. Am I wrong about this?
It's possible. I don't remember well enough.
Double feature show at iCloud.com.
My memory of...
if you know anything about this.
Presidential campaigns is so influenced by media.
Right.
That I distinctly remember two histories. One where everyone knew Al Gore was the best president. And one where... we were kind of sure it was probably George W. Bush.
Yeah.
I remember both of those histories now. And I'm not sure which one I lived.
Yeah.
It's hard to say because I was a lot younger.
Right, right.
But yeah, it's weird to think about these presidencies in the past and try to figure out exactly what lens we're looking at with Wag the Dog. Exactly which president they're kind of mocking.
Well, this was right before the Monica Lewinsky scandal.
Sure.
And I think that was about the best thing that could have happened for this movie because it was immediately, you can just imagine the sound bites.
Right.
I'm sure American News was full of, just like in the recent Dustin Hoffman movie, Wag the Dog, you know, people coming on and being like, what we really have here is a Wag the Dog situation.
Yeah.
Har har. There's like a factory that blew up shortly after the scandal and it's just, let's focus on this, which I mean, to some extent is true. It's very goofy here, but these, characters were accused of being just torn out of the pages of the newspaper,
right?
Of history. I think, you know, there could be something era specific about that. There could be something that's just tonal. When we look at it in The Insider, we go, well, yeah, stuff like that might happen. And when we look at it in Wag the Dog, we go, you're not going to hire a Hollywood producer to...
Right, exactly.
...produce a fake war where...
Well, and it's hard for us...
Kirsten Dunst and uses the Mortal Kombat soundtrack, and you know what I mean?
And it's hard for us, almost 20 years later, in the era of the internet and the truth online... to really even be able to swallow something this basic.
Yeah.
I mean, but at the same time, you see the people online decrying, look, this same girl was at every bombing for the last 10 years.
Yeah, right, right.
There's something fishy going on here. They keep hiring the same actors to be at the bombings, which, let's be honest, if you're orchestrating Dustin Hoffman producer level smoke and mirrors and Rickety Rackety and the old Razzle Dazzle, why would you just hire Kirsten Dunst back for the next Refugee video? Don't you think that that would be a massive oversight?
Yeah.
With the level, I mean, the budget seems infinite. Why would you go, oh, she was good in the last Refugee video. Can we just get her back to do it again?
Bring her back for the sequel.
Yeah.
Yeah. And why did they leave? You could see the prop letter on that moon rock. You can even see it. It's right there. You know, it's just ridiculous stuff. I thought the same thing about the internet though.
Yeah.
About how the internet has made suspension of disbelief an order of magnitude.
Oh yeah.
More difficult.
Oh yeah.
At the same time, we do see the craziest reaches of humanity now.
Sure.
That we didn't even know that crazy existed. And I can imagine the Wag the Dog Reddit subthread that, you know what I mean?
Totally.
Actually, that would be a good project for somebody, if you're bored, to write up the hypothetical Reddit thread of the war situation portrayed in Wag the Dog.
Well, this calls to mind that thing, I know I've mentioned it on the show before, but about the ET conspiracy that I was made aware of when I was like 18 years old.
What is this?
The security guard at my college dormitory informed me that Hollywood was actually, you're going to love this if I haven't mentioned it, but that Hollywood was actually created by the government. And the idea was to pay these people to make movies out of things that really happened before they became publicly apparent. So in the specific case of ET, there was actually an alien that landed that a kid found, and the police tried to stop him and his bike flew into the forest. And then the kid got sick as close to the truth as possible.
I see.
And then you go, okay, Spielberg, make a movie about it. so that when somebody who was really there goes, so when I was back home, when I was younger during Halloween, there was this kid who took an alien and dressed him up like a ghost, and then it made his bike fly. And then immediately everybody goes, you're just talking about E.T. That's not a real story. Right. That's fucking E.T.
While cute, movies take too long to make, yeah. I think is. Yeah, no, it's actually Hollywood is a conspiracy to make bloated movies that are terrible for hundreds of millions of dollars. That's the that's the conspiracy.
Right.
Man, that fucking moment in the film where they go to the producer's house, that whole, oh, this is bigger than the White House. Holy crap, is that era over?
Right.
That was some, that's some 90s right there. It is just the idea that he made a couple of pieces and, you know, did something for the Oscars and then just bought the world's largest mansion. I don't drive around LA very often thinking, look at that gorgeous place. Must be a producer's house.
Right.
But yeah, it, I think it does. So what's portrayed here borders a little bit on Moon Hoax conspiracy, on, you know, that type of conspiracy. Conspiracies really do, they exist because they capture the imagination. And
well, and they play on the aspects of stories that don't have definitive pieces.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the reason you can talk conspiracies about the moon landing is because we can't go there and go, nuh-uh, look.
Right. And, you know, the 9/11 conspiracy, the sort of loose change, when we talked about loose change.
Right.
That fits in line right with Wag the Dog, too. It's very much people were talking about false flag operations and these things that were orchestrated to cover it up. The thing that I take away from watching this movie again is this idea that how you tell the truth is more important than if the truth is true. What is definitely real, 100% real, that I harp on at least once per show is narratives. Narratives are very real. People get an idea in their head and they go, how is this particular thing going to be spun? And that's just what people run with, regardless of, you know, the truth of the matter. And we've talked about it a lot this year with the police, you know, and kind of being a terrible time. I mean, I think it was maybe Cop Car, we talked about it, but it's sort of being a horrible time both to be a victim of this as it ever is, but also a cop, because every wrong move you make, you fall into a large narrative, a stream that's going at full blast, that's just going to suck you right in of, well, this is what people think about cops right now. Oh, you've done a bad thing. You're part of this thing that's going on. And when you look at what becomes a story in the news, there seems to be no objective benchmark of what's newsworthy or what's not.
Sure.
You can't go, you know, so look at the scene where they decide they need iconography. They're developing the iconography, the Kirsten Dunst Mortal Kombat commercial.
Mm-hmm.
When they do that scene, they're very careful to create icons. We're going to have her run through and what kind of thing she holds is important. And she's on a bridge. The whole thing that, you know, they're doing these gags on CG and on how they can just punch in anything and whatever. But the heart of that scene is that the producer's job is really to stand there, see that big picture, understand how it fits into an even bigger picture, and then go, we need to push these buttons for an audience. And they put that commercial out, and what happens? Everybody runs with the story of, who is this girl? Look at this girl. She's got a little kitten or dog or whatever it was. It's a cat, right? Calico cat?
Yeah, it's a cat. It's a calico cat.
Yeah, right. And so that becomes, you know, that becomes the story. It becomes the thing they follow. Now, that's just one refugee. There are tons of refugees in that war. You know, we see all the conversation with this, with Paris of, you know, well, what about this thing? Isn't this thing more important? Why are people so fixated on this? why, you know, only 2,000 people died in 9/11, but a trillion people die drunk driving. And the one thing I think we can objectively take away from that is that there just isn't a benchmark for what becomes news. It's very narrative driven.
Sure.
That's a world where Wag the Dog could exist.
Right. Definitely.
I mean, absolutely exists.
Yeah. Yeah.
The only thing that stops it from existing would be, you know, three people can keep a secret if two are dead.
Sure.
That factor.
Right. It's the objective referential where as soon as you have one story, all it takes is a counter story and then either story becomes unraveled. Once there's a loose thread, you know, I mean, as soon as there's a loose thread, even a crazy person taking it and running with it will pick a hole into it.
Well, that's what happens with the Dustin Hoffman ending.
Right, exactly.
It's like they think that he's a potential leak.
Right.
So they have no other choice.
Sure.
They have to kill him. And when you look at the way they're going about things in this movie, they're doing it in a way that seems so farcical. You go, well, that couldn't really happen. But again, at the heart of it, the only thing that stops this from really being the truth of how this event of being a documentary is that their video wouldn't be convincing enough.
Right.
People, you know, the suspension of disbelief stuff, right? Or people would realize that this isn't a, I don't know, real country or, I mean, I say they're talking about a real country in here.
Sure.
I actually say real country thinking about Borat.
Borat, right.
And the fact that people think it's a made up country and then it turns out to be a real country. People don't even know.
Right.
You know, they have that information at their fingertips and they just don't know it. So you're playing on that kind of ignorance. The old shoe song that was just found.
Willie Nelson's character.
I know.
As somebody who lives in Austin, Texas.
So happy.
The Willie Nelson role in this is one of the most joyful portrayals of, you know, it's a great farce of him as a person, but also just having that guy, like, I mean, even if he weren't playing a character, if he were Willie Nelson and Willie Nelson was on your Rolodex for people to bring up when you need a song on the spot, because of his, this is on a tangent, but because of his integration into the classic nature of Americana, it's so believable that his voice becomes indistinguishable from, I mean, his writing voice becomes indistinguishable from something from the 20s.
Right, right. But then again, the suspension of disbelief that his voice isn't instantly recognizable. But
right.
Of course, he's not.
But they use a different singer.
Oh, yes, yes.
he pens the song and then they pawn it off on somebody you can't.
Which, as we know, is something that actually happens
exactly.
In music. So it's, you know, and I think the old shoes on the telephone lines or in the trees, also fucking brilliant.
It's great.
You know, it's like one of these ribbon campaigns.
Because then you go, oh, I've seen those. I wonder if that's from Wag the Dog, right. Why people do that.
Right. How many years until people will look at this and think it's a documentary? So I think the greatest feat of Wag the Dog, really, you know, it's a dark comedy and all that. But to have such a goofball premise and really to execute it like it's a goofball premise, but the concepts are super heavy. It's a great critical thinking piece. It says a lot about memory and message and delivery. How important, say, the White House press correspondent is.
Mm-hmm.
Or the people who come up with how exactly are we, you know, words are fucking important. How we say this, what people take away, what the headlines are. Obama makes a big speech. One sentence is going to get clipped out and used over and over and over.
Right.
Sound bites, right? So we need to have sound bites. All of that is part of creating narratives. It's part of creating icons, just like in film, and going, what are people going to take away and remember from this? Those are the focuses we need.
Sure. Well, it's interesting to end this conversation on icons, especially with what's coming up next week.
Yeah. So we have websites, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
The website is doublefeature.fm.
Right. I'm familiar.
It's, as I'll say again, if you want to go back and start somewhere, if you are new to the show, the best place to start, if there's just too much back catalog, year one's on Apple Music, you don't know what the fuck's going on here, just start at the beginning of year eight, which is the Everly and Digging Up the Marrow show. So that's on doublefeature.fm. You can find links to pod catchers and iTunes catchers and all that stuff on there. The email address is doublefeatureshow@icloud.com.
Mm-hmm.
This week I'm feeling like being corrected.
Okay.
That's usually not the case. Cool. But
yeah, hit us. Go crazy.
There was just a lot of different nutty stuff going on this week. So
sure.
A lot of fact-based.
Also, I talked about, we brought up George W. Bush. I mean, I feel like that's an invitation.
See, in my head, George Bush, the most hated president in 100 years, and yet elected a second term.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? I just don't understand. I just don't understand.
Well, I mean, at that point, you got to stay the course. 9/11 and all.
Right. You don't want to change horses midstream. I'm pretty sure that was a... Please write us about that, because I want to know if that was actually used. I would look it up after the show, but I'm as lazy as all the people listening who didn't do that. If we want to talk about some lazy producers, let's pay tribute to Brianna Kruger, Rod Fielder, Seth Hanasek, Enrique, David Koch, and of course, Leah Napolitano.
Right, and none of you can be trusted, so we're going to have to kill you off one by one. You'll be receiving your anthrax in the mail before next week's episode, which...
It's a dangerous time to say anthrax in the mail. You watch it. Hey, can I mention, actually, people can't see this. I showed you this earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So, in a new place, and a lot of the artwork and stuff is old. When we first met, I had a ton of movie posters.
Yep.
In the apartment, but they were...
You introduced me to the term one sheet during that time.
Yeah, the one sheet, man. The 27 by 40s. And, you know, so you get these theatrical one sheets that come out, and they were just too much of a problem to move from Chicago to California. And then I just got busy, and now I have some one sheets up for things that I've worked on, which is awesome.
Even cooler.
But I made one for Double Feature, even though it's not a movie, even though it is a movie. But I just felt like it's taken the better part of a decade, and I just like to have that up. So I credited all our executive producers. So more than just appearing on our show, all the executive producers from every time we've ever had one are now on a list on my wall. I don't know if that's creepy or kind of cool. doublefeatureshow@icloud.com. Just want to let you guys know you're in my mind and in my heart. What are we doing next week on the show?
All right. So now that you've derailed my segue twice.
Have you seen those new segues that have like shorter?
Yeah, I have.
Like shorter things than you. Segue on.
So we're doing Alfred Hitchcock's Vertigo, which is where the term vertigo shot came from, which is why I was talking about iconography, but blah, blah, I don't know, something. If you want to talk about iconic directors, we're also doing a John Carpenter movie in true, I'm just spitballing, in true double feature form, pairing one of the most well-beloved filmmakers in history to one of the most well-beloved filmmakers in double feature history. Once again, with feeling, Vertigo and In the Mouth of Madness next week on Double Feature. Watch more fucking film.
And goodbye.
This program is a proud member of the Battleship Pretension Fleet.